Good afternoon. I'm Tanya Grove, Chair of the Employee Assembly, and on behalf of my colleagues on the Assembly and Beth McKinney, our staff elected trustee, I'd like to welcome President Skorton, Vice President Mary Opperman, all other vice presidents, all staff colleagues to Bailey Hall. The order of events for today will be our annual awards presentation, followed by the President's address, a Q&A session, and finally lunch. The Employee Assembly Appreciation Award is presented each year to a Cornell staff member or group in recognition of their outstanding contributions and continuing service to the university community. Last year, the Cornell Police, Crisis Management Teams, and Environmental Health and Safety received the award for their compassion to the university community in a very difficult time. This year, in his welcome back message to the campus community, President Skorton said, "My gratitude and admiration go out to our staff colleagues across the campus who perform an incredible variety of tasks that support education, discovery, and public engagement. In July, we celebrated the launch of a new financial software system, which, after a monumental effort by numerous employees, now replaces an obsolete system with one that does more and will eventually cost less. Today, we thank 8 staff groups who have worked under great pressure to learn and implement this new financial system while educating the campus community on these new financial processes. Please join me in welcoming Tammy Howe, Donna Jenny, Janine Massey, Sue Schatzneider, Becky Sellen, Christine Schaefer, Sandy Sweezy, and Cindy Van Ostrand. We've asked them to join us to accept their awards on behalf of the Business Service, Financial Transaction, and Academic Service Centers. I'd also like to ask Ann Shapiro to come to the podium to say a few words on behalf of the groups.
It's with great pleasure that I thank the employee assemblies for recognizing teams. I think that's profoundly important, and I personally appreciate it. I'd also like to share with you the challenges these teams have had to face in the past 12 months, particularly in the past 6 months, and say any one of these challenges on a standalone basis would have been exceedingly impressive to have met that challenge. But you've got to understand that there are at least 5 or 6 challenges that confronted or provided opportunities for this group all at once, and I'm going to name them. They had the challenge, first of all, of the finance initiative, which brought us new structures for financial transaction processing, and that went into effect last January. Then they had July 1st, an entirely new financial system and application that they needed to learn, and not only learn, but immediately work in. And we also brought them simultaneously a brand new general ledger. So when they said, "I want to set up an asset account," we said, "There are no asset accounts. Those have gone away. Now you set up an asset object code." They also had to face immediately the need for financial reporting in a brand new financial reporting delivery system. And then just to add a little more to their plates, we unfortunately brought the implementation up with what you know as sluggishness, and we won't deny that. And another challenge that they had, which was workflow, which is a wonderful feature once you know where and how to route documents. But when you get calls from people saying, I have 500 documents in my queue and I'm not quite sure how to reroute them, you know indeed there's a learning curve. And what's so amazing to me is that with all of these challenges, they've not only accepted and met them, but they truly have kept their eye on their primary responsibility, which is to serve their customer. I'm profoundly impressed. I'm profoundly grateful. I say a sincere thank you, and I also ask them to pace themselves, because the marathon, I'm sorry to say, is not over. Thanks so much. Just incredible.
While they're taking a photo, if I can ask everyone else who works in any of the business service centers or transaction centers who might be here today just to stand up so we can applaud you. Thank you. I hope you all can share our appreciation with your colleagues who couldn't be with us today. Now I'd like to invite President Skorton to the podium for his address. There will be an opportunity to ask questions after his remarks. Thank you.
Well, good afternoon. And thanks very much, Tanya. And my congratulations as well to the folks who just got this very, very well-deserved recognition. Can we thank them just one more time, please? I'll leave out the first three cards of my speech because Ann covered them better than I could. So this is good. This will really shorten us up a lot. That's good. Yeah, actually, four cards worth, Ann. That was good. Four and a half. So I'm glad that all of you came out this morning, the day after some of us anyway, many of us, had some time off. Hope you had a chance to be with your families and friends and enjoy the holiday weekend. And I want to take an early opportunity to wish you all a fabulous holiday for the rest of this season and a very happy new year. I can't say it often enough to you, as I say to everybody, how proud I am to be a colleague of the staff at Cornell University. I can't tell you enough, frequently enough, or loudly enough, how proud I am to work next to you and how much admiration I have for everything that you have done and that you are doing. And despite the economic constraints that we've been under, and for the last 3 years that of the six times I've had a chance to address you, we've been talking about budget, 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 and despite these economic strains, Cornell is still a very exciting place, a place that is moving forward, and a lot of it, a very large portion of it, is thanks to you. So I thank you for all of that. I spent a lot of time in the last year thinking forward to the sesquicentennial. Part of the reason for thinking about that now is that the students who started at Cornell this semester are the so-called sesquicentennial class, because many of them will graduate in 2015. And also, we've expanded the comprehensive philanthropic campaign to end at the sesquicentennial. So I've been thinking about what these 4 or 5 years from now will mean to Cornell, and trying to summarize the different things that I think are really important to us looking forward. So in conjunction with the balanced budget efforts at the university, and in conjunction with thinking about this, I want to tell you very, very quickly, and it may be redundant for some of you who have heard it before one way or another, sort of what I see for us as a community, as a family, if you will, between now and the sesquicentennial. The first thing I want to talk about is the fact that we're hiring a lot of faculty. 2.5 years ago, when the recession really began to hit us very hard, we cut down the rate of faculty hiring to the lowest it had been in 3 decades. And eventually, of course, with retirements, people my age and others retiring, this would cause Cornell to be a much different place than it would be with a full complement of faculty. So you've heard a lot about this. We're putting a lot of effort into recruiting the next generation of Cornell faculty, expecting about a third of our staff and faculty to retire in the next decade or so. The next priority, the next thing that's very important, it comes right on the heels of that and is neck and neck to me in importance, is to stabilize the staff workforce. And I'll tell you what I mean by that in a moment. Thirdly, to continue our commitment to need-based student financial aid. And as many of you know from personal experience or from friends or loved ones, this recession is not over. It's been very, very hard on families. And some of those families found it hard ever to imagine an education as expensive as a Cornell education. And some of them found themselves in a quandary, in a crisis, when the recession hit. How are they going to get through the remainder of helping their student finish paying for a Cornell education or borrowing enough and be able to pay that back for a Cornell education? So we made a big increase in our need-based student financial aid, and I think holding the course on that, keeping to our values that Cornell University is a place that students can come to based on their skills and not based on their means is very, very important. And then finally, in addition to the academic priorities of sort of reading, writing, and arithmetic, so to speak, I think that it's very, very important that we keep our eye on public engagement and serving our neighbors, whether that means contributing to United Way this time of year, whether it means volunteering, as so many of you do in addition to the terrific job you do, many of you directly interacting with the communities through your positions. But also, I think it means thinking more broadly about Cornell University serving the state of New York as its land-grant institution, even though the state is not able to support us as richly as it did in years past when the state's economy was more robust. So I want to talk to you a little tiny bit about details of these 4 areas. On faculty renewal, this year, in the first quarter of the year, we brought 104 new faculty in at Weill Cornell Medical College and at the medical school in the Middle East that we operate, as well as 63 new faculty on the Ithaca campus. So remembering that we have about 1,600 faculty here and about 1,200 faculty in New York, it may sound like a relatively small number, but it's a big number in any one year, and about twice as much as it was when we fell back to that very, very low number. The additional hires that we're making, are about half of those funds are coming from philanthropy and the other half are reallocated funds from within the university. The trick is to balance those increase in faculty numbers with a discipline in overall cost containment and stabilization of the staff workforce that will allow us to move the university ahead and continue to make this a really terrific place to work. So it's important to increase the faculty numbers, and it's important to do that within the overall context of the university's budget. Next, I want to talk about stabilizing the staff workforce. I understand that in many of the units across campus, as Vice President Opperman has made me aware, as she does on so many issues, she's made me aware that in many units across campus, supervisors and employees are working together to do this really difficult job of realigning the work of the unit to match up with the hands on deck, with the number of people to get the job done. And this old expression of doing more with less, you can't sustain that for a very long time, as we all know. And so realigning the work to be done with the people available, I'm very grateful is happening in some parts of the campus here in Ithaca right now. And I want to tell you that I'm going to work in the coming year, and by that I mean right away, starting in January, with my senior colleagues across the university to encourage these efforts to occur across the campus. Very, very important. I believe very firmly that the vast majority of layoffs and position reductions are behind us, and we've absorbed a lot of that, as you know, across the campus. But I very, very much continue to need your input and your advice and your reactions and your guidance. I'm going to use that word, guidance, as we work collectively to maintain the excellence of the university in a different time. Student access, I've talked a bit about a couple of moments ago, and you know, a little bit of this goes back to the original founder's motto that's probably on the front of this podium. Maybe it's not. It's on a lot of podiums. And that any person, part of the motto, is something for which Cornell's been known for a century and more. And it's straining our ability to do that because of the need to really, really supply sufficient need-based student financial aid to make it possible for families still to dream the dream of this education and for the students to get through it with debt levels that are handleable given the sort of scariness of the overall employment environment. Even during the very worst days of the recession in 2008-09, we did maintain and actually doubled over 3 years the amount of need-based student financial aid. Now, this was a big decision to do this. Doing something like that is not a zero-sum game. The university's revenues increase, the university's resources change, but it definitely was done with the understanding that there had to be a balancing act done to make the overall budget sustainable while still allowing the increased funding for student financial aid. And I have made the resources for all three of these things, stabilization of the staff workforce, faculty hiring, and need-based student financial aid, high priorities, and we're working to maintain all three of them, not letting anyone get ahead of the other one. And that's a bold thing to say, but that's part of my responsibility to make sure that we have a broad view of the university, and that broad view of the university's excellence has to include a lot of attention to the staff workforce. The last thing I want to mention of these four is this issue about public engagement. At this time of the year, when you have a chance to interact with a variety of family and friends around the country, some of you are around the area, and this last fall I had the eye-opening experience of co-chairing the Southern Tier Economic Development Council for Governor Cuomo, had a chance to see just how much help our neighbors in the state need from Cornell University right now. You don't have to go very far from this auditorium to find people who very much need that help, and you go along the Pennsylvania border, you go all the way across the Southern Tier, and you see a lot of people dealing with a lot of very, very difficult situations. And so I think it's important that we do the very best we can as Cornell family, not only to help each other, not only to think very carefully about our collective work going forward, but also to think about ways of helping our neighbors, whether it is, as I mentioned, the wonderful volunteer work that many of you do directly in the communities, on boards of these organizations, whether it's a contribution to United Way, whether it's loaning a helping hand through many other mechanisms. I so much appreciate and admire what you're doing, and I think it's important that the whole university keep our eye on the ball in this regard when people need our help across New York, and especially our part of New York near Ithaca and the Southern Tier, more than they have for a very long time. So I think it's very important that we maintain that focus. Speaking of United Way, I got some data just a couple days ago, and I'm pleased to report that the Cornell campaign has already raised nearly $500,000 toward the $805,000 goal, which is fantastic, and I thank you for all that you've done, and if you're still thinking about it, hope that you'll be able to pitch in to whatever extent you feel comfortable with on this campaign that serves over 40 agencies in our area. Now, I mentioned the Southern Tier Economic Development Council. In the next day, tomorrow morning, I'm going to be presenting along with my other co-chair, Tom Tranter, who's the CEO of Corning Enterprises in Corning. We're going to be presenting our plan to the panel of judges who are going to decide where money flows throughout the state. It's a competition. And the plan that we are proposing for the Southern Tier, including our area, covers agriculture, energy, transportation, and some other areas. And we propose to invest $122 million over the next 5 years that, if it were all invested, would create something like 12,000 new jobs across the southern tier, and very importantly, retain an additional 3,000 jobs and create something like 100 to 150 new businesses that would leverage another two-thirds of $1 billion in private investment. Now, it's a competitive process. We may not get all of that money ever or right away, but tomorrow we're going to make our pitch on behalf of the area. And please watch the newspapers. You'll know the outcome as quick as I do. In fact, if you get up earlier than me, you might know it before I do. Many of you have heard a bit about the New York City Tech Campus proposal. We have submitted that proposal. The mayor's office has asked that we don't talk about the proposal in public during the period of time where it's being judged. And so I just wanted to tell you, we put the proposal in. And as soon as we know something about that, I'll know, and you'll probably know the same day that I do as well about that one. Now, all these things that I've talked about, the participation that we've done together as a community, the collective work that we've done together to stabilize the university's budget, the work that we've done together to attract students to this university, the reason we were put here in the first place, that resulted this year, the year of the freshman sesquicentennial class, being chosen from the largest population of applicants in the history of Cornell University and the largest applicant pool in the Ivy League, almost 37,000 applicants for a little over 3,000 spots, means that we are in a position for Cornell University to continue to be excellent and to grow in selected areas. And getting to this point has required enormous cooperation from all of you and many others who are not here in Bailey today across the last 3 years. I've been having conversations with leaders across the campus about concerns that many of you have raised. Some have come directly to me through email, which I very, very much appreciate when you contact me directly at my private email, and through many other forums and brown bag lunches and input that you have to Vice President Opperman and to your supervisors and many others, concerns about what it's like to work here now after positions went unfilled, after layoffs have occurred, and with the reduction in the number of people working at the university, but yet a lot of work still to be done, and we haven't realigned the work with the workforce. I've been having conversations with various campus leaders about attending to these issues. If you have specific concerns about what is being asked of you, I encourage you, as we always do, to discuss them plainly with your supervisor. If your judgment is, for example, that you're given two tasks to do and you do not think it's possible to do both of them at the same time, within the time frame given to you with the resources at your hands, I'm asking you to talk to your supervisor and present the dilemma to him or her and work together to decide what can be done and how it can be done. That teamwork that Ann talked about earlier today in regards to the wonderful folks who got the award just a few minutes ago goes every day. It goes in good times. It especially goes in bad times. We need to work together. We need to hear each other's concerns. And we need to find ways to get to the end of each workday in a way that doesn't put your health at jeopardy. I recently asked all of you to complete an employee survey to help us better understand your perceptions about working at Cornell. I ask that this be done because I'm genuinely interested, and I want to see what you say, and I want to see what can be done to be responsive to points of view that you express and to guidance that you give me. I'm looking forward to receiving the survey results very soon from Institutional Research and Planning, and you'll be seeing a summary of these results very, very quickly after I see them. I can tell you, amazingly, that more than two-thirds of those who were invited to participate have actually responded. And you know, a lot of survey results, you think, wow, we got a 30% response rate, isn't that fabulous? This is over a 60% response rate, still going up a little bit, which is unbelievably important because it means that it'll be very representative of what those surveyed actually are experiencing. It'll be rich data for all of us to look at and for you, of course, to look at as well. I want to take a moment in a celebratory way to recite for you the many recent workplace awards that we've gotten. Why am I saying this? I'm saying this because even at a time where we've all faced challenges in our personal lives and business lives and lives as a university family, it's very, very gratifying to me to see that we're recognized still as a really super place to work. So these are just some. We were again noted as one of AARP's best employers for workers over 50. And every time I get a senior citizen discount going to do something, I think about how important my AARP card is and that they better recognize us for this employment program. We got an Alfred P. Sloan Award for Business Excellence in Workplace Flexibility. This one is very important to me because if you had to summarize, for me, in one word, the way to get through the kind of challenges that we are facing as a community, that word might be flexibility. So I was really happy to see that. A Chronicle of Higher Ed named us a great college to work for. We were named to Working Mother 100 Best Companies, the top 100 adoption-friendly workplaces, the top 50 most family-friendly employers by Conceive magazine, the 100 best places to work in information technology from Computer World magazine, probably the only article in there that I could understand, the top companies for executive women from the National Association of Female Executives, and, very interesting, the Exemplary Voluntary Efforts Award, the EVA Award from the U.S. Department of Labor. And without ignoring or in any way dismissing the challenges that we have faced and that we're still facing together, I'm so proud that leaders on this campus, and especially the leaders here in human resources, have helped us to focus on the importance of the workplace. I wonder if you'll join me in thanking all the HR professionals on campus. So that's a general view that I have of how things are, a chance for me to thank you, as I don't get to do often enough. And now, as much time as Tanya will allow me, I'd like to take Q&A. And answer any question. If I don't know the answer to it, I'll make sure that somebody who knows better answers you. And I think we have microphones up here in front. And Tanya, how much time do we have?
We have about 20 minutes. 20
minutes. Plenty of time. And please, any question that you would like to ask. It could have nothing to do with what I talked about today. I'm just here to hear from you. Anything at all, please. Thank you. Okay, now remember, I'm a licensed physician in the state of New York, so if you have any personal issues you want to bring up, I can maybe help you with that if you don't mind bringing them up in public. Please.
Can you refresh our memories as to when the proposal blackout date, when will the judging be?
For the New York City campus?
Yeah.
The question was, can I refresh you as to when we'll know? I don't know. So I can't refresh you because I don't know. I would say in the next couple of months we should know at the outside. Tommy, is that fair?
Yeah.
Tommy said something to the effect, I don't know, whatever you say. That's what he said. I wish I could be more forthcoming, but I really don't know anything more about that. I'd love to see the answer to that question. Gosh, or maybe we can tell each other stories about being with our in-laws or whatever over the last few days. I get stories from here to there about that. Yeah, please.
Can you respond to why we needed to apply for that in the first place, the tech campus in New York?
I'm not supposed to talk about the tech proposal. The question was, why do we have to apply for it in the first place? All I can do right now, and please understand, not understand why we did it, but understand why I can't talk about it. If you go back through the Cornell Chronicle, if you search back the Cornell Chronicle, you'll find stories in there that try to answer that question. And as soon as we can, we'll be talking about this more. It's frustrating, isn't it? I sort of like it because I don't have to answer any questions. It's a very important question. Please, you must have questions. Or comments. They don't have to be questions. You can, if you want to make some comments or criticisms or suggestions, Please remember, if it's more comfortable for you to ask me these questions by writing me an email, if you write to david.scorton@cornell.edu, it just comes to me. Nobody in my office screens those or looks at them. If you have a question to ask me, you don't want me to share it with anybody, I'll do my best to answer it alone. If you have a question and it's okay for me to share it with someone, I'll send it to one of the VPs or others who's an expert in that area. So maybe some of you can send me some questions after the fact right to my email. That would be super. And I'd love to see that or suggestions. Yes, please.
Can you talk about what the university may or may not be doing to level the playing field depending on which college you might work in? It seems that the financial situation is different depending on where you work.
This is a really important question. Thank you for raising it. The question was, what can the university do to level the playing field between colleges, or if I could broaden that out, between units, wherever you work at the university? Some units have revenue in excess of other units, and this is a really, really important question. Let me tell you the bottom line, and then I'll go through it a little tiny bit more detail. The bottom line is that it's not possible to totally level the playing field because of the vast, vast differences in revenue streams between colleges. It is possible to do a lot to try to buffer that effect. And some of the things that have been done in the past have been spreading deficits beyond the colleges where they accrued and trying to have a more general approach to looking at things that can be done between colleges. Having said that, the differences between colleges really come in sort of three flavors as I look at them. Perhaps there's more, but at least three that I know about. One, of course, has to do with support from the state of New York. And 6 years ago, when I first accepted this fabulous opportunity, I was amazed to see that there was very substantial state support comparable to what we were receiving at a state university where I was president before. And that support has gone down quite a bit, but most of it is still there. Most of it is still there. And I've spent some time, I always spend time doing this, but some time recently with legislators, state legislators, talking about it. And there is very strong sentiment in many parts of the state legislature to recognize the excellence of the land-grant university and to do the best. And we have had some very substantial stabilization of state support, but in other areas it hasn't been stabilized. So that's probably the biggest question mark for me is how our elected leaders will balance, continue to balance the state's budget. So that's a big one for sure. A second difference is those colleges that receive a lot of sponsored research funding. All colleges get it at this university, every single college, but some colleges, by the nature of what they do, are more involved in the sciences, the life sciences or physical sciences. Others are more oriented toward the humanities or social sciences where there's less public support. And that sort of cuts both ways, because if there's a special initiative like the stimulus funds two years ago, then that helps those colleges. If there's constraints on the federal budget, then it hurts those colleges. And obviously right now with the so-called super committee, I don't know how you can call it a super committee when they strike out like that, but whatever. We all have to hold our breath and wait and see, not for this fiscal year. Remember, the super committee's failure to come to a conclusion doesn't affect the budget we have right now. It's the budget for the next year. May or may not affect those colleges here that receive a lot of sponsored funding. And then the last thing has to do with the level of tuition and the type of tuition. Professional schools being different than undergraduate colleges, different than graduate programs. And so we don't spend enough time figuring out creative ways to level the field, but we do spend some substantial time, and we're spending time thinking about that now. I would be less than honest, though, if I didn't say that there will continue to be differences in revenue streams between the colleges that will cause some responses to be different. Some of the budget reduction initiatives like procurement are things where the university can save a lot of money, millions and millions of dollars, by doing things that everybody can participate in, that don't go along with any change in the workforce, and that I think can sort of help all ships rise, regardless of what other revenue. So I hope that in your work areas, I'm going to focus just for a moment on procurement, as you work with us to face the challenges of having a more centralized procurement system and all the frustrations and difficulties that happen at the front end, that you'll take a deep breath and work with us on that, because that's one way that everybody can be helped to spend a bit less money for things we're going to buy anyway. But thank you for that question. It's really important. Yes, please. Now you guys are warming up. Now I'm going to be in trouble. So the question was, do I see further reorganizations in facility services? I don't know. It's not an evasive answer. I just don't know. I don't know if you care to comment on that, Mary, but I just don't know. I realize all the changes that have occurred, and if you can't get that question answered somewhere else to your satisfaction, write back to me, and I'll dig in a little bit more. Please don't fail to do that. I just can't tell you off the top of my head. Very fair question. Yeah, please. Yeah, thank you. What a very insightful question. Don't you like it when people grade your questions? Like, that was a really good question. That was sort of a B-minus question. That was like an A-plus question. So the question was, did I learn anything in the Economic Development Council about whether there's, if I could paraphrase it, prospects for us to grow the economy of the Southern Tier without engaging, at least so far, in exploitation of the Marcellus Shale, given concerns that people have. I learned a lot from that process about two things, and I learned a little bit about the Marcellus Shale in terms of people's reflections on it. The two things I learned a lot about, the challenges and the real good solid thinking that a lot of communities and other institutions, companies, and colleges and universities are doing around the Southern Tier that I was really ignorant of. And I'm embarrassed to tell you, I was ignorant of very exciting things happening 35, 40 minutes from here. And so one of the great advantages of co-chairing that group was I got to hear the discussion from the people who came. And I left very optimistic that there were ideas there that showed promise in many areas, in healthcare, in agriculture, in the dairy industry, transportation, and some other areas that people are working on in one corner of the Southern Tier, and somebody else, you know, a light went off, and they said, gosh, that sounds like something maybe we could work on too. Secondly, I learned that there was a real appetite for people to actually come together and figure out ways to link arms, and the evidence of that is they showed up for the meetings. The public came out, not in huge numbers, but they came out dozens, not hundreds of people to ask, to listen, and several people to ask questions. And statewide, over 9,000 questions were filed electronically and suggestions. That's across the whole state of New York. And our population, the Southern Tier, is about 650,000 out of a state population of 20 million. So given our small percentage of the state, we had a lot of people with a lot of good ideas. The 800-pound gorilla in the room in the Southern Tier is for sure the Marcellus Shale. And because of the regulatory process still going forward to decide, whether drilling will be allowed in our state, we voted on a statement that we made public that you may have seen a few weeks ago, saying that we weren't going to ask for any public money in this round of things because it isn't clear which way this is going to go. Just like near Ithaca, if you travel around the Southern Tier, which I had the opportunity to do, you could see this issue ripping communities apart. I mean, I don't think that's too dramatic to say that. You drive by, one neighbor has a sign in a mailbox that says, I'm not getting by. Let's start. Let's go. Here's my phone number. Please call me. And the next neighbor is saying, you know, absolutely not. Under no conditions are we going to drill in this area. And so it's an unresolved issue. Just to say it again in public, we have a moratorium on drilling in our 12,000 acres that we manage, and that's continuing. That moratorium is continuing. But that's the 800-pound gorilla in the room. And we had a very full and frank exchange of feelings about that. At the end of the day, we didn't ask for anything as a council. But it'll be interesting to all stay in touch with each other as this goes forward. Very, very big issue. Questions or comments, please. Please.
Can you talk a little about the international initiatives that you mentioned during International Education Week?
Yeah, thank you. The question is, could I talk a tiny bit about the international initiatives that I mentioned? We had the 50th anniversary celebration of the A. Nowdy Center a couple of weeks ago, and I gave just some opening remarks for that. Cornell's been international since the very first classes were admitted in the 19th century. And right now, today, there's students and scholars from over 120 countries on campus. And we're in the top 25 schools in the country, no matter what size they are, in terms of just the absolute number of international students. And so I think it's really important that we continue our tradition of focusing on international studies. And I have some concerns that although Cornell's been a leader for generations in these areas, that we need to focus more attention on this to remain leaders and a welcoming place for international scholars and students in the future. So I'm calling for a quick turnaround faculty group to get together covering both the New York City and Ithaca campuses and help to point us in certain directions, whatever directions they see fit for international initiatives. And in the meantime, have asked that the provosts on both campuses get a little bit more involved in their interactions with deans to make sure that faculty and staff with international interests and expertise are factored in to the hiring plans for the academic activities here. Secondly, we've increased tripled the goal of the philanthropic activity for international activities to pay for a wide variety of things so that we can go forward and find non-GP budget sources for those activities. And I have a modest discretionary fund in my office. I'm going to contribute some of that to that effort. And so we talked about those seed funding opportunities. I asked that we look again at how we do the study abroad and other international programs for students here. Very complicated situation. We're going to look into that and then some other administrative things. So those are some of the things I covered, and it'll be interesting to see what the faculty group comes up with and what sort of feedback. Once that proposed plan comes out, I'll make sure that we have broad feedback around the campus like we did with the strategic plan initially. So thank you for that question. Yes, please. Yeah, the question was, can I talk about the changes in the academic calendar coming forward? That's still ongoing. I have not been a part of those discussions. They're having those discussions to then present to the faculty and to other leadership. We had a session not too long ago with the senior staff, that is the vice presidents, and some questions were asked about the calendar. And I think the most honest thing to say right now is that it's still a work in progress. I think there will be some changes here and there, and I think that we'll know the outcome of that. Let's see, Tommy, Mary, would you say in 60 days or so? Something like that for the fall calendar for next year. The level of changes that were being suggested were modest, but I thought positive changes for the campus. And obviously, depending on what those are, if there's different days of the campus being open, closed, and so on, it'll have tremendous effects on staff. And you'll know about it very soon after I know about it. But they were very positive, doing a lot of consultation, not just pulling ahead and making some decisions. I thought it was very, very positive in the way it's being done. And Bill Fry, Dean of Faculty, is helping to keep that keep us aware of what's going on. Very important.
Questions, comments? I should look up to make sure. Oh, there you go. So can I give you an update on what Ann called the sluggishness of quality, which is going to be the word now on campus we're going to talk about. I can give you only a sort of a most generic update. I could explain all the technical details to you except for the fact that I don't understand them. Except for that, I could explain them real clearly. But the leadership in IT, Ted Dodds and his team and Joanne DiStefano understand very clearly what a stress this is to the campus. They're getting advice both on campus and off campus about how to move things in the right direction. They are moving things in the right direction. I'm told by people who know this better than I do that things are getting better. I don't know if you agree with that or not, but I'm told that that's the case. And that's where things are right now. I don't know if any of my team wants to comment on that. They just gave me one of those, you've got to be crazy, I'm not going to comment on that look. So. I get that look a lot from my crack team. Yes, please. Uh-oh.
We've been meeting weekly. Is Ted here? Ted's here also. Ted can talk on the technical side as well. But we have been focusing on technical issues, and now we're going to start focusing on process issues. Because we believe that at the way we set up the system, we probably gave much flexibility, and as a result, we created inefficient practices. And so we're going to start working on trying to improve the practices. But the sluggishness, Ted has, I think, some really good news on what we just heard earlier today.
Sure, I just had a couple of comments.
If it's good news, use the microphone, please. Right there. If it's not, turn it off. It's fine.
Am I on? There we go. We've made a lot of configuration and technology changes to the Qali environment over the last, I guess, couple of months. And among the various initiatives that we've got underway right now, we've reached out to the community of universities that are running Qali successfully and received a lot of great advice from them and are now in the process of putting those fixes into place. We're trying to make changes on a weekly basis so that every Sunday a number of fixes go into place that should improve performance. It may not be visible on an individual week-by-week basis, but in aggregate, the response times are getting better and better. We have a number of other fairly significant changes to the infrastructure itself that we'll make during the quieter period later in December that should have yet more positive impacts. I've also commissioned an external study to look at the overall technology environment for all of these large information systems, because we're in fact trying to implement multiple systems at the same time. We have an HR system in the wings, and we also have a research administration system in the wings. We want to make sure that we've got the most stable and effective environment for those new applications to go into effect.
It gives me opportunity also to publicly thank Ted Dodds for all that he's done in a very short tenure that he's had at Cornell, not only to do the good technical work, but to be very open and transparent with us about how things are going. So thanks a lot, Ted, for what you're doing. Tanya wants me. Yeah, thank you. Tanya wants me out of here in a big way, but just to aggravate her, can we have one more question? Just one. Perfect. Great. Make it a long one. Thanks a lot. Thanks for coming. Thank you. That's an awful generous thing to say. I appreciate that. Please know how much I want to hear from you. And if there are questions that you more comfortable bringing up in the form of an email, david.scorton@cornell.edu. And if you write me, which I hope you do, just indicate whether you're comfortable with me sharing it so I can get some expertise on the answer. Thank you very much for everything you're doing. And once again, to the award winners today, congratulations. Thank you.
thank you all for coming today. I just want to say I feel fortunate to be the chair of the Employee Assembly and to work with top-notch colleagues from around the campus on important issues. It's the hope of the Employee Assembly that the work we do will inspire other Cornell staff members to join the EA or to get involved in other campus endeavors with support from their supervisors. For at the end of the day, the staff need that kind of encouragement and support and leadership that remains engaged, not just with big picture challenges and opportunities, but the day-to-day work, ambitions, and frustrations of staff at every level. The staff also need the respect and appreciation of faculty, barring the unusual, and look to managers and supervisors to step up to maintain professional decorum and morale, and acknowledge that stress at Cornell is real, but can be dealt with collectively rather than with disengagement and anger. It is when times are rough that one's true character is revealed, and I salute my fellow Cornell staffers for rising above and beyond the call of duty for campus and for each other. Thank you, and enjoy your day.